You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And boy, oh boy, Mitt Romney has officially come out and said that he's not ready to be president. You know, he's been refusing to answer any questions about how his foreign policy might be different from Obama's. And last night he got out ahead of the crazies, including the neocon crazies who are advising him. By the way, they're the same neocon crazies who were telling the Bush administration after May 1st, when George Bush was first told, May 1st, 2001, when George Bush was first told that bin Laden had cells inside the United States who were determined to strike us, what turned out to be 9/11. May 1st, the first time the CIA formally, officially told George W. Bush, and he ignored it. He said to the CIA guys, "You're being fooled. Bin Laden and Saddam Hussein are conspiring to make you think that, you know, Osama bin Laden's up to something here in the United States, when in fact it's all Saddam Hussein." Well, not only were they not conspiring, they hated each other. So anyhow, those were the neocon, right-wing, war fundamentalist crazies who were advising George W. Bush, who caused him to believe, at least according to Eric, Kurt Eichenwald's lengthy article in Vanity Fair and his new book, that, you know, it's all a scam, right? This whole thing, it's all a scam. Saddam Hussein trying to fool us and to take our attention away from him and put it on Osama bin Laden and the possibility he might attack us. We're not going to do that. Those are the people advising Romney, which is why yesterday was 9/11, right? Yesterday was 9/11. And the tradition is, you know, on 9/11, you don't turn it into partisan things. You don't use 9/11 for the purposes of attacking the other party. Neither party does that. I mean, you know, talk show hosts might do it, but politicians don't do it. So 10 o'clock last night, more or less, 10 o'clock Eastern time, the Romney campaign issues a statement to the press that is embargoed until midnight. And this is just mind-boggling. The statement says, "We have seen the foreign policy of weakness and decline in American influence and respect. Yesterday we saw the consequences of this perceived weakness." And he attacked the Obama administration for issuing an apology about this movie that has really, you know, flipped out these people in the Middle East. He says, here's his exact quote: "I'm outraged by the attacks on American diplomatic missions in Libya and Egypt," and this was later. He says, "It's disgraceful that the Obama administration's first response was not to condemn attacks on our diplomatic missions, but to sympathize with those who waged the attacks." Okay, it's just not true, but that's what happened. The timeline is people were in the streets and people were PO'd and upset about this movie. The Egyptian embassy, our embassy in Egypt, issues a press release to the Egyptian people saying, you know, "We think the movie is a terrible thing too, but, you know, we have freedom of speech in America, but, you know, officially we're not with that movie. That doesn't reflect American values." And then they got attacked. And once they were attacked, the president and Secretary Clinton said, this is terrible. This is horrible. This is barbaric. They used a lot of, you know, adjectives like that. So Romney was wrong in everything he said. And he's even got people like John Sununu now saying, you know, I wouldn't have done it quite that way. And Chuck Todd saying, you know, this is a disaster. I mean, I think this is what we're watching here is the unraveling of the Romney campaign. And again, I will say, you know, I've said that 1,000 times. I will say it again. The only way that Romney can win the White House now is by lying and suppressing the Democratic vote. And, of course, they're doing both of those things. But to the issue of the Middle East, way too many Americans, particularly on the hard right, are quick to jump in to blame Islam for the death of four Americans and the taking down of three U.S. embassies or consulate offices. You know, way too many Americans are quick to jump in and blame. But this is simplistic thinking at the best and, frankly, racist at the worst. Now, keep in mind, this was riots that led to the death of four people. Remember Rodney King when he was beaten by police in Los Angeles? That was followed by weeks of riots in Los Angeles in which thousands of people were injured and 53 people were killed. Here in the United States, because of a videotape. Now, conservatives at that time tried to blame black people for the riots, insinuating that there was something wrong with African-American culture, probably created by LBJ's Great Society programs, and we got to kick all these people off welfare. And you know the rant, you know the rant that they do. But what happened after the Rodney King beatings, or the most recent riots in New York City over the past decade, each one following a police shooting, is not an expression of a defective culture, any more than what happened in Egypt and Libya is. In fact, it's a reflection of how this country, our country, was born. In 1776, Americans rose up and rioted against a system of government that was oppressive and unfair. The riot arguably really began in 1773, 1774, with the massacre in, Boston? Just outside of Boston. As Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence, when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government. The history of the present king of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over the United States. You see, people don't riot when times are good. They riot when they're pushed to it. The people of both Egypt and Libya have seen the United States support dictators in their countries for generations. They've seen us fund repressive and violent armies and police forces. They've watched our transnational corporations work with local oligarchs to keep the rich fabulously rich in Egypt and Libya and the poor in poverty. Just like in the United States when redlining was legal and regularly done, keeping poor neighborhoods poor, where discrimination and badly funded schools conspire to reduce entire populations under absolute despotism, where communities are torn apart by poverty and hopelessness. Americans have risen up over and over again, whether it was the American Revolution, the Civil War, the labor movement from the late 1800s until the early 1930s, or in our most poor and destitute communities from the 1970s to today. And it's not just people of color in the United States. Irish people in New York City rioted in 1863 because they were poor and being drafted for the Civil War, while rich people could hire stand-ins to fight for them in the Civil War. They rioted in Boston in the late 19th century to protest attempts by the largely British ancestry Protestant government of Massachusetts to force their kids into Protestant public schools. Italians and Jews at various times rioted against terrible working conditions, particularly in early 20th century New York City. It's not because they practice a religion that's stuck in the 10th century or because their skin was a different color or because they're uncivilized, what happened in Egypt and Libya. It's because they were facing, as Jefferson wrote, a long train of abuses and usurpations. The match that lit the riots in the Middle East may have been an intentionally inflammatory video. But Muslims in more affluent parts of the world, they aren't rioting. They aren't trying to throw out the United States. At the end of the day, this really isn't about Islam. It's about oppression, poverty, and despair. And until the good citizens of the United States realize that and stop with the jingoistic and racist language and intellectual shortcuts, and instead move to stop bombing these parts of the world, instead help them build schools and hospitals, we're going to be facing more and more of the same. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your thoughts on this. I'm sure there are some right-wingers out there that want to take me on that little rant. Stick around. Welcome back to the program. We're there to have a serious adult conversation about real issues rather than just a little jingoistic bumper sticker lines. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Corky in Rochester, New York, watching us on Dish Network on Free Speech TV. Hey, Corky, what's up?
I just don't understand what people are thinking. They know every time you attack somebody's religion, you're going to get an adverse reaction and people die.
Well, don't always die. I mean, there's people who come. There's been a fair number of people coming out and trashing Mormonism, you know, by way of attacking Mitt Romney.
I mean the Muslim religion.
Yeah, okay.
We've had experience with this.
Yeah.
You know, you're just antagonizing them.
Well, that was the whole point.
The argument between your God and my God. Why do we are a bigger nation than that? We are more intelligent than that. And why do we allow these people to get away with it?
Well, because we honor free speech in this country. You know, this is one of those areas where, in terms of the religious response, at a certain point, I'm almost there with Bill Maher. You know, the religions go crazy but let's step back from that for a minute. What you're saying, Corky, by suggesting that the guy who created this video and the company that created this video or whatever, apparently it was a $5 million movie, that the people who put this thing together are responsible for this, is like saying that the police officers who beat up Rodney King were responsible for 53 people dying in the riots. And I would submit to you that the reason why 53 people died in the riots in Los Angeles after the Rodney King beating and over 1,000 ended up hospitalized, the reason for that had very little to do with those police officers beating up Rodney King. It had to do with generations of oppression. It had to do with 400, 500 years in the United States of slavery for half of that time, and then apartheid, legal apartheid up until the generation, up until very, very recently. It was just during the Carter administration that redlining got outlawed, for example. And so you've got people who generation after generation after generation see themselves screwed by the man, and then the man comes out and beats up Rodney King, and so they go out in the streets and raise hell about it. And it's not about Rodney King. It's about what has happened for the last 40 generations. And I would submit to you that what's going on in Libya and Egypt right now has very little to do with Islam. Islam is just the excuse, just like Rodney King was just the excuse. It was or the trigger, maybe, the match that lights the firecracker or the gunpowder pile or whatever. But what's really going on is that in those two countries, you have had for generations, for at least three or four generations, at least since World War II and arguably since World War I, you have had oligarchs and dictators propped up by the United States, approved of by the United States, selling their products to the United States. In the case of Egypt, the second single largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid. In the case of Libya, a major, supplier of oil to the United States. These people know that for generations we have been supporting the secret police who rape their daughters and wives and torture their men and kill them and disappear them if they become politically active. And, yeah, they just overthrew Gaddafi and they just overthrew Mubarak in Egypt. But, look at what's replaced them. The military is back in charge in Egypt. It's an oligarchy all over again. And the oligarchy in Libya has not gone away. And the average person on the street is not seeing the benefits that they thought they would see. They have not seen the improvement in their standard of living that they thought they would see. There's an old, I believe it was Thorsten Veblen. It was one of those, Norwegian economists back in the late or early 20th century who suggested and who came out and said, that revolutions or riots will not happen because conditions are bad. They happen because the difference in people's expectations of how conditions should be and how conditions are gets that gap between expectation and conditions gets so wide. In other words, people never rose up when those dictators were running Egypt and Libya because they didn't think it would do any good. So, they didn't expect to have a better life. Once they overthrew Mubarak and Gaddafi, they expected that their lives would get really better really fast, and they didn't. And that's why these people are rioting. That's why they're upset, just like, I would submit to you that in Los Angeles, people thought that after, after the Great Society and after, affirmative action and after all these steps to try and, make America a colorblind society, which didn't work. I mean, they took some positive steps, but, America is still a very racist society, that people just went off on it. Am I making sense here, John?
I agree with you.
Excuse me, Corky?
On those points.
Okay.
I agree with you on those points. My point is, with the Muslim religion, you know it's a push-button issue.
Of course.
You just got to push that one button.
Of course, just like cops killing African-Americans in New York City.
And that's what the stupidity is. There's where the stupidity lies.
Well, I don't disagree, but my point is that we're not going to be able to control that. But what we can control is helping Egypt and Libya, you know, have a functional middle class and doing something about the oligarchies there. So, you know, we'll see. John in Philadelphia says you disagree with me. I'll pick you up first. We just have a minute to the break, John. Your point?
Okay. Yeah, Tom, hi. Just real quick then. I've been listening to talk radio for 30 years, and this is the first time I've actually called in just to say that your last statement absolutely, totally disgusts me. It truly does.
Which statement?
The statement that this is somehow our fault that our ambassador and his staff was murdered.
No, I'm not saying it's our fault.
How is that our fault?
I did not say, I never said that. You were not listening. What I said was, it was this was the result of these people expecting a better life and they didn't get it. Now, if we want to play a role in these countries, we need to be helping these people get a better life. Or we need to get the hell out of the countries. But we can't have it both ways.
Tom, I agree with you. We should get the hell out of the countries. I don't think we should have ever gone there in the first place. I don't think we should have ever bailed out Kuwait either.
I'm with you, John. I'm absolutely with you. So here we are. You're a conservative. I'm a progressive, and we agree on this point. Thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. We'll be back 28 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So who do you think is responsible for what happened in Libya and Egypt? And what do you think of Mitt Romney's response attacking the president while our people are dying? Talk media for the rest of us. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Do you agree with Mitt Romney that what happened in Libya and Egypt is the fault of President Obama? Yeah, for that matter, can you identify any time in the entire Obama presidency when he ever went out and apologized for America? I mean, Romney keeps referring to this mythical apology tour that Obama did. It never happened. In fact, he went over to Egypt and he stood on the same platform with the dictator Mubarak and said to the people, tear down this dictator. America stands with you in your call for freedom. He started the Arab Spring. I mean, if Ronald Reagan had done that, I mean, you know, his tear down this wall and everybody gave Reagan credit for the end of the Soviet Union when it was fairly obvious to everybody, including people inside the Soviet Union, that it was crumbling. I mean, Gorbachev didn't have to be, he's a very smart guy, but he didn't have to be a rocket scientist to know what was happening. It had nothing to do with Ronald Reagan. Just like I would submit to you, what's going on right now in Egypt and Libya had nothing to do with President Obama, or if it did, it only is to the extent that Obama basically endorsed the Arab Spring before it happened. It happened. People's expectations then were really, really high. Hey, we got rid of the dictator. He was sucking the billions of dollars out of our economy. Now we can share that money with each other. And it didn't happen. The poor are still poor. And they're PO'd. They're upset about it. So, anyhow, back to your calls. Tim in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. You asked the question, who's to blame for what's going on,
yeah,
you know, with all the problems in the Middle East? And to me, it goes all back to the beginning of the Iraq War and Bush and Cheney. And they are, and I'm not some starry-eyed idealist, but at the same time, if you really want, I mean, I think it's a moral imperative that they be put up for trial and go to the Hague for war crimes.
Yeah. So in other words, your argument is that Bush and Cheney, by invading two Muslim countries, killing millions, hundreds of thousands anyway, of Muslims, displacing over 6 million destroying the lives of so many people who probably have family or share communication, if nothing else, with the people in Egypt, share a language and a religion and an ancestry with the people in Egypt and Libya, that we basically created the tinder pile that got lit by this video. Is that your point?
I think it's true.
Yeah. Well, Tim, I wouldn't disagree with that in the micro, but I think that we really need to keep an eye on the macro and look at what happened at the end of World War One, when a bunch of guys got together and said, okay, let's divide up the Middle East, let's draw some lines here, and let's do it in a way that's useful to the British Empire and to the French and to the Belgians and to the Americans, and let's create countries and put dictators in place. And we should have just said, okay, the war is over. The Ottoman Empire was collapsed, by the end of World War One, which had control. That was all one giant country, right? But prior to the Ottoman Empire, it had been a whole bunch of tribes in small local areas and things like that. And we just shouldn't have been, we shouldn't have been reorganizing it. Just the same thing with Africa. I mean, read King Leopold's Ghost, about the Belgian Congo. We being the Western world, in many ways set all this stuff up, and now you've got multi-generational brutality against these people, and what can you expect back? Anyhow, Tim, thanks for the call. Howard in Miami. Hey, Howard, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I am getting better every day.
It's okay with me that Romney says what he says, because I think every time he says something like this, people are more convinced that he just is totally out of touch. There is something about accusing the president of having fault or blame for this that people just innately, without even knowing why, they just know it's wrong. It doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
It's just over the top, and it diminishes Romney even further, if that's possible.
Yep.
As being an individual of international stature.
Well, what's going viral right now are the pictures, the photos of Romney giving, calling a press conference and attacking President Obama for what happened in Libya and Egypt, and smiling, grinning, and walking off the stage with this big grin on his face, like, oh boy, I really got him. And then you compare that with a picture of President Obama and Hillary Clinton standing in the Rose Garden and with a solemn look on their face. We just lost four of our people. I mean, the thank you for the call, Howard. The gaming community, people who game online, one of these four people who was killed, it was a very, popular gamer with this one particular game. And that community actually was the first one to identify him as one of the people who died. This diplomat, Christopher, what's his name here? I don't mean to be disrespectful. I just don't have his name right in front of me. I'm sorry. Our main diplomat there who died, this guy was, he was a good guy. And then you look at Mark Halperin. I mean, Mark Halperin used to write for the Wall Street Journal. He's a conservative for all practical purposes. This is in Time magazine. He writes, unless the Romney campaign has gamed this crisis out in some manner completely invisible to the Gang of 500, his doubling down on criticism of the president for the statement coming out of Cairo is likely to be seen as one of the most craven and ill-advised tactical moves in this entire campaign. Is Christopher Stevens. Thank you, Shano. Christopher Stevens is the name of our diplomat who died. Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Tom, I think you've missed the point. 20 years from now, this is going to be called the September Surprise, just like Nixon colluded with Vietnam to gain the presidency, and Reagan colluded with Iran to gain the presidency. Then Romney has colluded with Israel. That movie was made by an Israeli, and Rahm Emanuel served in the Israeli army.
Yeah.
Rahm Emanuel has sabotaged the domestic front, and now that Israeli that made the movie has sabotaged.
Come on, Ed. I'm it's like your conspiracy theory is getting out of control. It does seem that the guy who put this movie together or is involved with it is an Israeli American citizen. We don't know very much about him, but I don't think Israel had anything to do with this. That's crazy. Dan in Chicago. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Yeah, hi. I also had a question about the guy who made the movie.
Yeah.
If he's an Israeli-American citizen, we know what he was trying to do with the movie, and he got the reaction he wanted.
Yeah, and there's even a suggestion over at the Daily Beast today, which is, Newsweek, that Pastor Terry Jones, the guy who had his, you know, Quran burning that caused the riots in Afghanistan, the bloody riots in Afghanistan, that Pastor Terry Jones had something to do with funding this movie. It was a $5 million movie.
Right. Well, not only that, but, you know, what was just happening with this, though, is awful coincidental timing with the dust-up Netanyahu's having with the White House.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's any connection there, because there is a lot of funding, too, that goes with the movie. So there's people behind it than just the guy who made the movie.
Well, see, if the goal of this, thank you for the call, Dan, if the goal of this Israel's behind it conspiracy theory is to suggest that somehow this is going to help Mitt Romney, you know, nobody told Mitt Romney, right, because he has totally blown this. And so I really doubt it. You know, I think it's wrongheaded. Chuck in Oakland, California. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
I thought it's really, really important to emphasize the chronology of this thing. Romney is claiming that what he's complaining about only is that Obama's first response was not to condemn the attacks. That's what he's complaining about.
Right, which is a lie.
The lie is the thing that needs to be emphasized here, because in the embassy in Cairo, which is the apology, they say that happened way before the attacks ever began.
That's right. And by the way, the White House has put out that they did not know about, and nor did Secretary Clinton know about or authorize that news release that was put out by the Cairo embassy.
Well, I'm sure that. Yeah, that's very good, Tom, but it's more important to say that came out before the violence ever happened. The embassy came out and they said, we condemn this film because they wanted to head off any violence.
Yeah.
That's very important to say that then what happens is the violence happens. Romney says, oh, it's Obama's first response is not to condemn the attacks. Of course, we have it. He has condemned the attacks. But he's putting the spin on this thing. It's really basically... It needs to be exposed for what it is.
We're back to my constant mantra. The only way Romney can win this election is by lying. And now he's lying about the order in which the events in Egypt happened and President Obama's response to them and the State Department's response to them, for that matter. And you're absolutely right. That needs to be emphasized over and over and over again. Thanks a lot, Chuck. Fred, New York City. Hey, Fred, we got a minute to the break. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, and it's good to see you. I usually see you on RT.
Thank you.
Doing a great job as usual. I think, you know, a lot of people in America just don't really know recent history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking like maybe 50 years. You know, I know that we trained Iraqi pilots in 1979.
Yep.
We've been funding them with weapons, selling weapons.
We funded Saddam Hussein through the Iraq-Iran war for a decade. A million people died in that war.
And people over here don't think that that's going to, you know, create some kind of bad feelings. Those people in those countries don't have what we have here, where we can, you know, write our congressman or call a news station and get help, whatever.
And they have long memories. They have long memories, especially when part of their memory is that their great grandfather was killed by the infidels who came in to do the original occupation back in, you know, after World War One or something like that, or to cut the deal for the oil or whatever it may have been. Fred, thanks a lot for the call. An excellent point. 46 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Will 9/11, since Romney released this news release 10 o'clock last night, will 9/11 be remembered as the day the Romney campaign went south? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, the place where despair is not an option. Stacey Davis Gates is with us. Stacey is the legislative coordinator with the Chicago Teachers Union. Stacey, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. And thank you for joining us. I wanted to get a definitive answer to something. The right-wing talk radio in particular, but also the right-wing blogosphere, is going nuts with this assertion that y'all went on strike, the Chicago teachers went on strike because they want a 30% pay increase, and they're already making $70,000 a year. Can you tell me what's really going on? Where did these numbers come from?
I don't know where those numbers came from. What I will say is that those numbers are completely untrue, and our teachers are not in the streets, tens of thousands of them, every day this week because of a pay raise. This is an educational justice issue here in Chicago. You have African-American teachers here in Chicago that have been disproportionately impacted by the school actions brought onto them by CPS policies that closed schools, that turned them around, and have had no significant impact on achievement.
Right.
So in 2000, you have 40% of them in the system, and 10 years later, there were only 19%. You have a system where only 1.7% are African-American males. It's absolutely the most ridiculous thing ever to say that these people who have made it their life's goal to empower and educate children are out there for 30%. I mean,
yeah,
they fully recognize the economic issues plaguing our nation.
Yeah. I also understand that in order for the teachers to legally go on strike, they had to claim a salary dispute, even though that really isn't what's front and center. What's really front and center are things like classroom sizes and air conditioning in the summer and only a third of the schools in the Chicago public school system having libraries and stuff like that. Do I have that right?
You, what you have right is that there is an issue with pay fairness. We have
sure.
a longer school day that the mayor implemented and has not paid for.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an issue with pay, but to the extent that it's the 30% that the blogosphere on the right side is coming out with is vastly overrated in that respect. It's
yeah.
not that. You work longer, people should be compensated for that longer time that they
sure.
work.
So somebody who starts out as a teacher in the Chicago Public Schools, you know, with a bachelor's degree or even a master's degree in a topic in, you know, science or whatever, and a, you know, a secondary degree in education, what do they start at? What is the starting wage?
Well, it depends on where you come in. So,
mm-hmm.
like, for the last 45 years, our contract has given preference to those who extend their education and refine their skills through professional development and furthering it with, say, a master's degree and
sure.
a doctorate degree. And also years of experience. We know that when a teacher refines their craft and they are in front of students year after year, then they become better at it. And
right.
so they should be compensated for it in that way. I think I read somewhere today that it's $70,000. I'm a teacher. I taught for 12 years myself. And when I started here, I didn't make $70,000. So that's, again, wildly overstated.
Yeah. So did teachers start out at what, 40, 50, something like that?
In that range. In fact,
yeah.
I will tell you this, that in our area here in the Chicagoland area, our suburban counterparts are making far more than we are, and
sure.
consequently we're losing, you know, a lot of new talent to the suburban areas. And those jobs are hard to get because people do not leave. They retire from those jobs.
Yeah.
Here in Chicago, it's quite the opposite, in fact. The turnover within the first 5 years is striking. As well, we're getting rid of teachers who are well into their careers with the school actions that we implement to combat issues that stem from poverty. So instead of providing the school with services like social workers and clinicians, what we do is that we, you know, wholesale get rid of schools because their achievement is not up to par. So, for instance, at Finger High School over on the south side of town, they hit the reset button, and they fired everyone in the school from the janitor to the teacher to the principal. Everyone was gone. And subsequent to that, there was violence in that school, in that neighborhood, as a result of the new people there not understanding the cultural cues, the emphasis on building relationships with the students, because our students come to us with a variety of challenges. One of those challenges is trust.
Yeah.
And that trust is not built just because you are a teacher in the classroom, but it's built through time and trust
and
relationships.
And you all are you are dealing with over 15,000 homeless students the Chicago Public Schools are educating. I mean,
right.
that's got to be an insane challenge just in and of itself.
It's absolutely insane. And we're staffing social workers and counselors and clinicians at the rate we did in the 1960s when the issues were not as profound as they are now.
Right.
So our staffing levels. So, for instance, I think we've projected that some of our social workers have at least 100 cases.
Wow. That's incredible.
It's absolutely incredible.
That means you get to see each person three or four times a year, maybe.
Maybe. You know, one thing in the contract that we were able to secure for our clinicians is space to meet with these students that's private and closed off from, you know, anyone else or anything else. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, you had to hustle space in a building because it wasn't necessarily given to that. We also had to negotiate making sure we have books in the classroom on day one.
Yeah.
I mean, these are things. So when I hear, oh, teachers get paid too much money, oh, we need greater accountability standards, I hear all that, but then I also understand the practical impact of education here.
Right.
If you're negotiating books in a classroom on day one, computers that work in the classroom for day one, if that's on the negotiating table, there is a serious disconnect.
You're absolutely right.
I understand
that the suburban schools around Chicago are spending, in some cases, $24,000, $25,000 a year a student, and the Chicago public school system is spending around $8,000 per year per student.
We rank at 50 when it comes to finance.
Yeah, that's a disaster.
Finance,
it's an absolute disaster. Stacey Davis Gates, CTUnet.com, the website, legislative coordinator with the Chicago Teachers Union. Thank you, Stacey, for being with us today.
Thanks a lot. You take care.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. We'll be back 58 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, over the last hour, you've heard my take on both what happened in the Middle East and Mitt Romney's take on it. Well, let's check in with Rich Miniter. RichardMiniter.com is his website. Rich is a conservative commentator and journalist and author of his latest book, Leading from Behind. Rich, welcome to the program.
Good to be on your program, Tom.
Thanks for joining us.
I'm not a conservative commentator. I'm an independent-minded commentator, and I'm not registered with any political party.
Okay. All right. Noted. So what's your...
I can refer to you as a liberal host, if you like.
I'm proud to say that. You can call me a liberal, call me a progressive. You can even call me a democratic socialist, and I will raise my hand. From your perspective... You know, what is your take on what has happened over the last 24 hours?
I thought Hillary Clinton's remarks today were spot on. We need to remember this is a small but savage group. Mm-hmm. And we need to remember, look into the details of this. I think the Republicans in Congress, some of whom are talking about today cutting off funding to Libyan government, are making a tremendous strategic mistake. There are Libyans who risked their lives and were injured to try to protect the consulate in Benghazi. There are other Libyans who carried the dying U.S. ambassador to the hospital in a vain hope to save his life, and they did so at the risk of their own lives. And there are other Libyans who emerged out of the crowd to save other American lives. So these are people who risked their lives to save Americans.
Yeah.
We don't know the identity of the group that carried out the attack, but clearly it was organized, it was planned, it was almost certainly rehearsed, and it was funded. Somebody paid for those rockets. Somebody paid for those bullets. Somebody paid to train and organize those people.
Yeah.
My guess would be a foreign intelligence service that is hostile to the United States.
So you think it's probably Hezbollah coming out of Iran as opposed to Al-Qaeda?
I don't know if it's Hezbollah or some other proxy of the Iranian state,
yeah.
But it certainly looks like the work of Iran, of one of the 16 Iranian intelligence agencies,
yeah,
acting through a proxy group that it is funded and has some relationship
with. Well, it's not inconceivable. My take on this is that...
It could be the Libyan fighting group, which is an Islamic group that had been funded by Iran in the past,
yeah,
that Gaddafi had
imprisoned. But whether it's funded by Iran or not, I mean, you know, you could say the American Revolution was funded by the French, and therefore, you know, we should be all upset about George Washington because he was a French front man. He really wasn't, even though the American Revolution was, in fact, funded by Louis the, what was it, 14th?
The Poles and the Irish and other European governments also provided funds to the U.S.
Yes,
government.
Absolutely. But my point is that my take on this is the if you read the history of revolutions, and look at the work of people like Thorsten Veblen and who's this guy? Crane Brinton, who suggest that what causes revolution, what causes rising up, is not when conditions are so bad people can't stand it anymore. I mean, there are entire nations all around the world where people are living on $2 a day and they're on the edge of starvation half the time and they're not revolting. It is when the difference between how the circumstances of people's lives are right now and what they expect them to be, when that gap exceeds a certain point, that's when people revolt. And I would submit to you that when these people brought down their dictators, as Obama encouraged them to do, when he stood there with Mubarak and basically said, tear down these dictators, you know, when he went to Egypt, that, you know, and kicked off the Arab Spring, when these people took down Mubarak and they took down Gaddafi, they then expected, knowing that those guys had been stashing billions of dollars away, they expected that pretty soon their lives would be middle class and everything would be cool and they would, you know, and they're not. I mean, what's happened in both countries is that oligarchies are continuing to run them and the poor are continuing to be poor. And so that gap between what they expected to be the outcome of their revolutions and what they actually got is huge. And, you know, you could even argue that to a certain extent it's huge because we didn't intervene and say, okay, we're going to start building schools or something. We're going to take, you know, 5% of the Iraqi budget and help out, you know, help them build a middle class. You know, if we're going to be in these countries and if Egypt is going to be the second largest recipient of our foreign aid and if we're going to militarily intervene in Libya as we did, then we have an obligation to help them reach those expectations or get the hell out of the area. Your thoughts on that?
Tom, with all due respect, I think you're dead wrong. I think the reason why people are attacking our embassies is not because we failed to provide a Marshall Plan for the Middle East and spend billions building schools and closing the gap between rich and poor. When you talk to ordinary Arabs in these countries, as I've done, what they are sick of and the reason why they revolted in Arab Spring is the corruption of the petty officials. How just to get your child into school, you would have to pay so many bribes. Just to get adequate health care, you'd have to pay bribes.
Yeah, it's an entire system that is corrupt, and it's been corrupted from the oligarchs on down.
After Mubarak left, I saw an extraordinary scene in the streets of Cairo where the policeman tried to shake down a taxi cab driver, and he just brushed him away and said, no, we're done with that,
right.
And he drove on.
But I would submit to you that those
corruption tax
that those
intervening in ordinary people's lives and making them bow before a government and pay them and pay them and pay them, and the humiliation of that, not just the money.
If you look at the countries, though, Rich,
for basic life.
Rich, are you filibustering me?
No, please continue.
If you look at the countries where that is the norm, I mean, if 20 years ago in Mexico, I got you know, driving down the street, going the speed limit, got stopped by a cop who demanded a $50 bribe to let me go. I mean, when you look at the countries where that kind of thing is the norm, what you find is that those petty officials are very badly paid because the system has been set up with the expectation that they will be bribed. You know, I experienced the same thing trying to get into Uganda during the war against Idi Amin in 1980. When I was, you know, coming in from Kenya, and I kept showing up at the Ugandan embassy day after day after day, and they say, oh, come back tomorrow to get your visa. And finally, this old British guy at the hotel I was staying at said, just slip a $20 bill and you'll get it instantly. And I did. And it's because that's how these guys get paid. That's literally how they're able to pay, you know, to pay their rent, is by bribery. And what has happened is that the autocrats, the corrupt dictators got torn down. The system didn't get reformed, and it's still like that.
Well, in Libya, first of all, they are in the process of reforming, and they've made substantial progress. The U.S. media has not been paying attention, but I think Libya is a very different situation from Egypt, and we cannot just sort of blanketly treat all Arab countries as alike. There's significant cultural and historical differences.
There's huge differences. And in those countries where people are not experiencing
it. A closer look at Libya should give Americans hope. And the fact that so many Libyans risked their lives to save American diplomats, in vain in some cases, but happily in other circumstances, they did save lives. Yeah. That should count for something.
What's your take on Mitt Romney coming out and attacking President Obama for what the Egyptian embassy released before the riots had even started, saying that that was Obama's response when, in fact, Obama never even knew that that press release had been written or released?
Well, certainly as President of the United States, he's responsible for all the official statements of his administration, including those of the U.S. Embassy in Cairo. And so that indicates a lack of proper controls and clearance. But second of all, no amount of free speech, no odious internet video justifies violence.
No, my question is what's your take on Mitt Romney lying about the order of events? Has he shot himself in the foot here politically?
Lied or not lied, I don't make it my business to track the campaign statements of Mitt Romney, but I can tell you that
what Romney said was that Obama's first. Rich, hang on just a second. Let me just tell you. Romney said, and he's repeated it now in a second press conference, that Obama's first response to the violence was to issue an apology, basically. And that was not the first response of the Obama administration. In fact, that was never a response of the Obama administration. That was what came out of the Egyptian embassy, the U.S. embassy in Egypt, before the riots even began. They were trying to prevent the riots.
Well, obviously they didn't succeed. Look, attacking the free speech rights of Americans as a way to forestall violence, it doesn't sound like a great strategy to me.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, and I don't think that's what they were saying. But in any case, Rich Miniter, richardminiter.com. Thanks a lot, Rich.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
4:16, we'll be back with more on this and other news of the day.
Teach your children well, their fathers have.
Welcome back to your media support group for We the People of the United States of America. Daniel in Colorado Springs, Colorado, listening on AM 760 there in Denver. Hey, Daniel, what's up? Daniel?
Hi.
Hey, what's on your mind? You are on the air.
I was just going to say that I've been listening to the news reports and information coming in and this unfolding event. And especially Mitt Romney's statement, first of all, it just goes to show that he can't even open his mouth without criticizing the president, even at a time when 4 Americans have died, and so it's an act of symbolic violence, especially grinning and trying to score political points with the neoconservatives. And second off, we've made lots of reference to this apologizing tour, which we all know that didn't happen, but if somebody puts out a video that is so offensive to Islam, it not only reflects on America, but it reflects badly to that person as a whole. And the president, being the leader of America, and representing all of us, needs to apologize if the act of one or two or a group of people does something that kills people, especially Americans.
I disagree. Daniel, people, just as I said, I don't think that the police officers who beat up Rodney King were responsible for 53 people dying in the riots that followed that any more than
I think that
the guy who did this video is responsible for what happened in Egypt and Libya. What happened in both cases, the cops in Rodney King's case and the video in the case of Libya and Egypt, they were the match that lit the fire. But the fire was a whole big pile of kindling that had been accumulating literally for generations as a consequence of U.S. and other Western countries' policies towards these parts of the world, which have left, you know, vast swaths of the population in utter destitution and poverty and, you know, with corrupt political systems. They want something better. And, yeah, there may have been some outside influence or something. You know, we've heard the conservative pitch now, and maybe the neoconservative pitch. Oh, yeah, it had to be Iran behind it. I don't think it had to be Iran behind it. I think, you know, it could have been anybody. It could have been totally local and indigenous. It really, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because those kinds of movements don't catch on. They don't get, you know, they don't get action. They don't get traction unless there's some underlying reason. And frankly, if people want to make videos insulting Islam, or they want to make videos insulting Mormons, or they want to make videos insulting Catholics or whatever, they should have the right to do that. I don't think that we should be walking on eggshells because of people's religions. I think that when public officials, you know, public officials in the United States make, you know, remarks that are anti-Semitic or anti-Catholic or anti-Muslim or something like, you know, then they deserve to be censured and kicked out, and that kind of thing. But public citizens, individual citizens, I'm with the ACLU that defended the Nazis marching in Skokie, Illinois, you know, a community that probably had more Holocaust survivors than any other community in America on a per capita basis. You know, it was a horrible thing, but free speech is free speech. And that is one of the values of this country, is that you can stand up and speak out and you can publish your speech. And YouTube makes it possible to publish it worldwide. I don't think that the United States should be sitting around saying, okay, now we're going to try and figure out how to censor YouTube. It's just, you know, it's not what we should be doing. What we should be doing is helping, you know, notice that there are many Muslim countries that are not experiencing these kinds of riots and really don't care about this video because their lives are fairly reasonable. And that's what we need to be addressing is the conditions of revolution. So anyhow, Daniel, thank you for the call. Zach in Chicago, listening to WCPT. Hey, Zach, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. I just wanted to elaborate on what you were talking about for the conditions for revolution and such, and social change. I was wondering if you read a book, The True Believer, by Eric Hoffer?
Oh, years and years ago, I read several books by Eric Hoffer. Like 30 years ago, I read several books by Eric Hoffer. I don't recall if that was one of them, but I did read his books about, you know, or his writings about the following mentality and the authoritarian mentality. Is that what you're talking about?
It's a history of mass movements, or like the mindset of a mass movement.
Yeah,
where he discusses all of those things, and he seemed like a fascinating individual.
Oh, he was brilliant.
In general, but yeah, that's the only one I read. But yeah, what he was pointing out is that it's a lot more when you have a society that has the haves and the have-nots, and then the have a little want mores, which I, you know, kind of consider like class here.
Right.
That it's when those people are affected. They don't see that they're able to move up through the social class or, you know, like what's going on right now where the middle class has been depleted for the past 30 years.
Right.
That's what really gives a lot more spark to a social movement.
Well, I think that's why the Tea Partiers showed up, you know, when the billionaires provided them with buses and stages and things. And although they're not so much showing up anymore because they figured out that it was a billionaire scam. But it's why the original Tea Partiers were showing up, because and that's brilliant characterization. The have nots. How did you say that? Who have a little and want more?
The haves, the have nots, and the have a little want mores. Which
right.
would, you know.
Yeah. And let me add to this. Let me add to this. The have a little want mores genuinely believe that under the circumstances of the day, they should be able to get more, and yet they can't. And that's when revolution happens. They have to have that belief that they have to have that gap between reality and expectation. If their expectations are not that they'll be able to get more, they just have a little and they want more, but hey, they know that they're never going to get more, you're not going to have revolution. But when they genuinely believe it's possible to get more, that's when you're going to have revolution. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. And another thing that he pointed out was a big factor was another condition that we have in this country is when you have a lot of soldiers returning home and no jobs or anything for them to do.
Yeah.
You just have this.
Oh, yeah. And the Libyan military was huge. The Egyptian military was huge. They've probably both been downsized now. Excellent point, Zach. So thank you for calling and sharing it. Have a little want more. That is a great characterization. And that's what's happened here in the United States. I mean, that used to be the middle class. Have a little and it's enough. Now it's have a little and, hey, I'd like to be in the middle class. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So are we going to have revolution here? I don't think that the expectation gap is that big yet. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Did Mitt Romney destroy his presidential chances by this huge foreign policy screw-up of last night on 9/11, on the day that we're all supposed to be above partisanship, doing away with the embargo on the 10 p.m. news release criticizing President Obama for the the press release that was issued by the Egyptian embassy before the riots began. And saying that, and talking about Obama's apology tour, which never happened. Is the press waking up to the fact that this guy will lie about anything and then double down on his lies? I mean, Paul Ryan didn't even go with this lie. This is incredible. Danette in Hinesville, Georgia. Hey, Danette, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I during the broadcast when you were talking about how we have freedom of speech here and that you don't blame the, you know, like you gave the analogy of how the cops in L.A. weren't necessarily at fault for the riots because of the kindling, the things that had happened over time that just kind of caused.
They were the spark that triggered the riot. Was
exactly.
My point. Just like this video is the spark that triggered these riots in Libya and Egypt.
Right. And while I agree with you with that, I also think, though, something that is missing from the conversation is that in the United States, we have freedom of speech, and we have this concept of freedom of speech, but other countries do not.
Right.
And I think that we have a responsibility as a country to be mindful of what we say and how we say it and who we're speaking of. And when someone is irresponsible in making a video, just because you have the freedom to do it doesn't mean that you should. And that I feel like people need to be reminded that our actions have consequences.
I agree. It was a terribly irresponsible thing to do. But when you said,
yeah,
if we as a nation produce this kind of stuff, then I agree with you. If any official government agency or any government employee had anything to do with producing this video, I think that they should be fired and maybe even prosecuted. But this was not a government employee. This was an individual citizen, possibly a citizen, but it was an individual in the United States who is protected under the First Amendment, whose First Amendment speech rights are. So it was, I agree with you, it was stupid. But, you know, is it criminal? Are you suggesting that we should pass
no.
a law against
oh,
criticizing
no.
people's
of
religions?
Of course not. No. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying, though, is, one, that we have I just think we need to be more responsible with what we say. And when I say we, I just mean people.
Well,
in
I think
general.
This was an attempt at irresponsibility, particularly if, as Newsweek is reporting, Pastor Terry Jones, who has been on this program, it was involved. He's the guy who was, you know, he was going to have his Burn a Koran Day. Remember that? And which led to the riots in Afghanistan that led to the death of a couple of people. I mean, you know, Pastor Jones knows that he's poking a hornet's nest here. And, you know,
right.
whoever made this movie knew that they were poking a hornet's nest. And the tragedy is that we were next to that hornet's nest that they were poking. And, you know,
yes,
our diplomats. And in the case of Afghanistan, our soldiers. And they're still being killed as a consequence of those kinds of things. But none of that, though, says that, in my mind, that we should criminalize speech about religion. I think, you know.
No, I wasn't saying that at all. I don't
okay.
think in our country that's not what our country is founded on. Our country is founded on, you know, being able to say what you feel and there's no criminalization at all.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that as the other thing that really bothers me, especially with people like Pastor Terry Jones, it's okay for him to poke the hornet's nest, as you so eloquently put it, regarding someone else's faith or someone else's beliefs. But the moment that somebody says anything negative at all about Christianity, then whoa, then there's this uproar and oh my God, somebody's taking away someone's rights and
yeah.
blah, blah, blah. And it's just a double standard.
Oh, the Democrats didn't put God in their convention speech, you know,
yeah,
or their
it's
platform.
Ridiculous.
It's
yeah. utterly ridiculous. And I just think that we need to, as people, I think our world would be so much better served if we think before we speak, if we really say,
I absolutely don't disagree with you. And we have to realize, Danette, that there are always going to be people in our country who either A, don't think before they speak, or B, do think, and they're doing this to provoke a response. And it's going to be a response that's going to hurt us. But, you know, hey,
and it does hurt us. And then you have to think about Mr. Stevens' family. I mean, my
sure.
husband is a soldier, and I just, my husband a lot of times says that I'm extremely militant in my attitude about stuff like this, because when my husband's life is on the line, one, he chooses to defend our country.
Yes.
But when someone says something so idiotic and it puts my husband in danger, who is protecting your free speech rights,
yep.
to me, it's just disrespectful and it's wrong. And so now I have to live without my husband because someone said something stupid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I totally agree with you about, I think that we're saying the same thing, that this was wrong. It was stupid. It shouldn't have happened. And we and your husband will defend the rights of this person to produce whatever video that they want, as much as we may hate it. Danette, thank you very much for the call.
Exactly.
I want to get some other voices in here. Thank you very much. Dwayne in Sirius in Studio City, California. Hey, Dwayne, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, you know, that one was the perfect call to precede me. I find that just to be unimaginable doublespeak.
So you think that when the Nazis were marching in Skokie, Illinois, they should have been put in prison?
No, I think they should have been allowed to march.
Okay,
anybody
so
else that wanted to march in their face should have been able to, should have been there just marching right back at it.
And they
were, of course, yeah. You know, I used to be an attorney, I practiced civil rights law for a while, but the idea is, look, these people are using terrorism, and it comes from, and everybody needs to stop pretending about this. Religious extremism is the natural form of the concept. Religious moderation is the bastardization of it. It's the liberalization that comes with free countries and, you know, the freedom to think about things. And so we got to stop asking, how come us moderates can't understand why the extremists do what they do?
Well, let me ask you a question then, Dwayne. And this is serious. This is no gotcha.
Yeah.
The Iraq is one of the oldest countries in the world. The Epic of Gilgamesh, which is the oldest known piece of modern Western writing, 7,000 years old. Gilgamesh built the city of Ur in Uruk, you know. Okay.
They copied Noah's Ark from that.
I'm sorry?
They copied Noah's Ark from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Noah's Ark, there's a lot of stuff that came out of the Epic of Gilgamesh that later shows up in the Old Testament and other religions as well. So
yeah.
Iraq is one of the oldest countries, one of the oldest civilizations on Earth. And Iraq, in that entire 7,000-year history that we know of, never in its entire history had experienced a single suicide bomber until we occupied their country. Why?
Well, two things. Number one, there's a bit of a bad analogy there because, you know, bombs haven't existed for very long. But aside from that,
people can self-immolate like the Buddhist monks did in Vietnam. It never happened in Iraq.
But you get the idea. The idea is this, okay? There are people manipulating poor, uneducated, and to some degree educated people. It depends on the country, right? True believers, yes, and also people who believe that this life is not supposed to be about rewards. That's for the next life. There's a whole mix in there of people that do these crazy things.
But what creates that environment?
What creates it is manipulation. Okay, so there's obviously...
Then why did it not happen before we occupied the country? In 7,500 years,
well,
it didn't happen until we occupied the country.
Because in recent history, it was secular, and it was a dictatorship, and there wasn't a religious...
There were a lot of religious fundamentalists in Iraq before we came along. Saddam Hussein was protecting them. He was protecting the religious crazies.
Yes.
He was protecting the Christians. He was protecting the Jews.
Yes, they were like the Catholics in Nazi Germany. They existed at the sufferance of the dictator, but they didn't have the power over people they do. When a dictatorship crumbles, that power void is filled by theocracy.
Wait a minute, being a suicide bomber is like the ultimate power. I mean, you know, why did they not take on Saddam Hussein?
Because there was no leadership, there was no propaganda message.
Why was there no leadership?
Because they were under the thumb of the dictator.
I would submit to you that it's because life wasn't that bad. When we occupied that country, you know, 5 million Iraqis got kicked out of their houses. 3 million of them had to flee the country. 100,000 died according to our military. And that's when things are really, really bad. And then that gap between the expectation of how things are and how things should be gets so wide. And there's so much despair associated with it that you have things like suicide bombing and religious fundamentalism that starts becoming political movements. And I would submit to you that you don't see that unless you see that kind of despair.
Yeah, but that's not what I called it. You sort of dragged me into that conversation. What I wanted to say was this, that if people are blowing us up because we're expressing our freedom of speech, then we need to defend our freedom of speech. We cannot tattletale to it. So you should not be able to, just like you just told me that you agree that the Noah's Ark was stolen from the Epic of Gilgamesh, and that therefore it's obviously Bronze Age nonsense, then nobody should be entitled to demand that we respect that anywhere in the world under any guise of religious cloak of authority or anything else. And so we shouldn't tolerate that. And what we need to do is get smart and manipulate their people the way Hamas does, the way these grassroots...
Okay. So manipulation. Dwayne, thank you for the call.
To the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I think if you want to manipulate people, give them food, give them an education, give them a house, and help them get a job.
Every time I read the news, I'm always more confused. They're telling me to choose, but there's only lies to choose from. And how many died today?
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Viagra for your brain, our program. Don't tell Limbaugh, though. He'll want some. Jim in East Tawas, Michigan. Hey, Jim, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. You know, earlier you were alluding to the country of the United States and how we get involved with other countries around the world and, you know, propping up dictatorships and supporting, you know, like supporting Mubarak. And, you know, everyone knows we supported Saddam Hussein when he was our sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
To fight Iran for, like, what was it, 10 years and that. But
yep.
Why don't you help us out with your great history knowledge and everything and take us back to the Shah in Iran,
mm-hmm.
and the embassy there and the Ayatollah and what that was all about.
Yeah. I mean, that was originally in 1954, Iran had a democratically elected president who was going to nationalize their oil and start selling that oil for the benefit of the Iranian people. And this, and you know, the CIA and the big oil companies in the United States got together and said, we can't have this. This was during the Eisenhower administration. We can't have this. And they went in and they overthrew. I think his name was it Mossadegh? I don't know. Something like that. But we overthrew this guy and replaced him in Iran with the Shah. And who was, you know, the
secret police.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we had this dictator who sold us all the oil that we wanted and did our bidding and built this giant military to oppress his own people by and large. But he was our dictator. And then, you know, he got cancer and fell, as it were, during the Carter administration, the last year of the Carter administration. And, you know, the people were so upset. And the only structure, sort of like, you know, the Martin Luther King in the civil rights movement in the United States emerged out of the churches because it was the only structure intact.
Reverend King, you got it.
Yeah, it was the churches were the only structure intact in the black community in the United States because of 500 years of naked oppression and, you know, crushing any other kind of movement. And
mm-hmm.
basically whites in America said, okay, well, we'll let you have your churches. And that's why the civil rights movement came out of the churches. Well, it's the same thing in Iran. The only thing that the Shah wasn't absolutely rigidly controlling were the churches, the mosques. He couldn't. I mean, there's a certain point at which you can't do that. And so when that vacuum was created by the Shah being overthrown, it was the guys running the mosques who stepped in. And that of course, you know, Ayatollah Khomeini and then Khomeini and, you know, all these Ayatollahs ever since. And they basically created this theocracy.
All they cried about that whole hostage thing was return the Shah, return the Shah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the whole hostage thing, I think, frankly, was the Reagan campaign. Bill Casey, who Reagan made the director of the CIA, and the day that he was to testify before Congress in their Iran-Contra investigation about this deal, he had a seizure in his office at the CIA, was taken to Bethesda Naval Hospital, and they cut out the part of his brain that's responsible for speech, literally rendered him speechless. And Bill Casey was the guy who was identified as the one who went to France and cut the deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages for a full year so that Jimmy Carter would end up losing the election. And that's, you know, Carter was way, at this point in the election, Carter was 6 points ahead of Reagan at 2 months out. I mean, Carter was way ahead of Reagan. Everybody thought Reagan was crazy. And when Carter really started to collapse, it was when he tried to send those helicopters in, and they crashed in the desert, and, you know, he was unable. He was rendered impotent in the minds of the American public. And that's what happened. But I digress. I think that, you know, the main point here is that we have not treated that part of the world well since World War One, and arguably since before that, although, you know, when it was the Ottoman Empire, they pretty much had their own say and their own thing. And that's coming back to haunt us.
So the real fundamentalists, they think deep down inside, because they've gotten away from their book and they haven't been a part of this where the whole world needs to become all of Islam, the rest of the world that's not of Islam then is the world of war.
Well, you know, so for some small percentage of people, I mean, you'll find those same teachings
and they think that they drifted too
right.
far.
You will find those same teachings in virtually every evangelical religion. You won't find them so much in Judaism, but you'll find them in Christianity, you'll find them in Catholicism, you find them in Mormonism, you find them in the Protestant religions, you find them in all of the basically evangelical religions. Well, I'll leave it at that. Matt in Fort Worth, Texas, says you want to disagree with me. It's all yours.
How you doing, Tom?
Fine, Matt. You're on the air.
Well, you know, we've got to realize that this is not comparable to the race riots of the 80s or the Rodney King that you referred to. This is a cult of people who call themselves Muslim, hide behind the term religion, okay, and are at war with us. And the more that we stick our heads in the sand and let them build up power over here, the sooner that what happens over there is going to happen over here.
What's war?
They're here to take over.
What is war?
It's when you fight.
No, I'm this is a serious question.
Tom,
war has always seemed to me to be a form of mass insanity. It is the organized killing of one group of people by another group of people. And you know, to the extent that there might be a group of people like Al Qaeda, for example,
maybe
who are at war with us, you've got a president right now who, over the objections of many of us who think that we shouldn't be bothering with this stuff, has been, you know, with his drone strikes, killing Al Qaeda people, person after person after person after person. So, you know, if they're at war with us, we're at war with them too.
Well, he's only doing that because he has to, because he has to present this facade that he's here to defend the country. He's the most anti-American person I've met in probably 15 years.
You've met Barack Obama?
No, but, you know, not met personally, but met like, oh, I've...
So what makes him anti-American?
The fact that he hates his country.
And what proof do you have? What would cause you to believe that Obama hates this country?
You gotta watch him and look at what his agenda is without having your little liberal bias and saying, oh, he's wonderful.
Well, I'm just asking for a specific.
His agenda.
Give me one example of it. One piece of it.
His entire agenda.
One piece of it. Okay, he's got this huge agenda. Give me one piece of it.
Wait till after my election. This is my last election.
Give me one piece of his agenda that demonstrates he hates America, please. One piece.
His entire agenda.
Okay, so he's got 500 pieces. Name one. Please. Name one.
His entire agenda. The entire agenda. Anything that man...
Matt, I got it. Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, I want to get back to the Romney campaign melting down in a few minutes, but first... Attention, cash-strapped states. The largest for-profit prison corporation in America has one heck of a deal for you. The only hitch is you have to begin imprisoning your own citizens at an alarmingly high rate and keep them in jail for 20 years. Now, I'm not making this up. That's the offer coming from the Corrections Corporation of America in a $250 million proposal sent to prison officials in 48 states across the nation. The deal works like this. States sell their prisons off to the Corrections Corporation of America, also known as CCA, a multi-billion dollar for-profit corporation that's already operating 66 prison facilities across the nation. CCA pays the state a lump sum off the bat for the prison. For example, in Ohio, CCA paid the state $72 million to take over the Lake Erie Correctional Institution. From that point on, the state will then pay CCA just a couple $1 million a year to manage the facility, which the state paid to build and CCA had just bought for a song. That sort of sounds like a crummy deal, but CCA and proponents of prison privatization argue that this deal is actually going to save states a bunch of money. Unfortunately, that's not true. As a recent study out of Arizona by the Tucson Citizen shows, selling off public prisons to for-profit corporations actually cost the taxpayers of Arizona an extra $3.5 million a year. Although with the initial privatization sale of the prison, Republican Governor Jan Brewer did get a few million bucks that she could use to make it seem like her budget was balanced, and then future generations are going to have to pay it back. So it's a crummy deal. Not only that, for-profit prison corporations like CCA haven't proven themselves to be any better at running prisons than state governments. It's just like charter schools haven't demonstrated. In fact, by and large, you look at all the studies on charter schools versus public schools always beat charter schools. Same with the same thing with privatized prisons. This is the commons. This is stuff that should not be privatized. For example, in Idaho, CCA's prison facility saw more violence than the nearby state-run prison. Between 2007 and 2008, there were 42 recorded assaults at the state-run Idaho State Correctional Institution. During that same period, at CCA's Idaho Correctional Center, there were a whopping 132 recorded assaults. It's like three or four times more. So not only is CCA overcharging taxpayers for their services, which is one reason why CCA's CEO, Damon Hinninger, made more than $3 million last year, but CCA prisons are far more violent as well, which makes you wonder why mostly Republican state lawmakers and governors would fall for this pitch. The answer? Money. A lot of money. In the last 10 years, CCA has spent more than $17 million lobbying for lucrative prison contracts and tougher laws to throw more people in prison. Also in the last 10 years, CCA has given nearly $2 million to various political candidates. So that explains that. But there's a much darker side to this prison privatization plan than just crony capitalism and wasting taxpayer dollars. It's predatory capitalism as well. As part of CCA's deal to buy public prisons, the state has to promise to keep those prisons at least 90% filled for 20 years. Our states have to promise to lock up as many people as the corporation demands, even if crime is down, even if there are fewer robberies or drug crimes, or if, you know, heaven, just imagine if they were to decriminalize pot or something, assaults are down. No matter what, the prison population still has to remain. They still have to have 90% occupancy for 20 years. That's the deal. Since CCA turns a profit off each inmate, they need to make sure there are a lot of citizens locked up. So let's think about what's happening here. By handing off our prisons to the private market, to the so-called corporate free market, we've suddenly injected the profit motive into our criminal justice system. So it's no longer about keeping Americans safe from crime. It's no longer about Americans who might mess up getting a second chance or saving them from undue punishment or giving them punishment that's appropriate to the crime. It's now strictly about making a buck. That's why CCA has lobbied for stricter drug laws and stricter anti-immigration laws. Those laws don't make us any safer, but they do lead to more people being thrown in prison and thus more profits for corporations like CCA. We have state and local police forces now preying on the citizens they are supposed to serve and protect just because a contract with a for-profit prison corporation requires them to do so. They've got to keep 90% occupancy in that prison because that's the contract that the state signed. This is predatory capitalism. And it's important. This shows how important the commons is and why the commons should be in the hands of we the people through our elected officials, through this thing we call government, rather than private corporations. Historically, prisons have belonged to we the people. They belong to the commons. They've been administered by our democratic republic, our government. They haven't been run by corporations like CCA that were unaccountable to we the people and only focused on profits. It's plain and simple. When it comes to things that deal with human beings, that deal with human lives, that deal with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the profit motive should not be number one like the free market, the corporate free market dictates at all. In fact, the profit motive shouldn't be a motive at all. Motive number one should be the good of our society and the good of the people. It's time to reclaim the commons. frankly, I think we should be passing laws in various states around the country that says it's illegal to run a school or a prison or a hospital on a for-profit basis. Seriously. It used to be. It used to be that insurance companies had to be not-for-profit. It used to be that hospitals had to be not-for-profit. It used to be that schools had to be not-for-profit. It was the only way they could incorporate. And it used to be that nobody even imagined running prisons as a device so that they could, you know, generate dividends to give to stockholders so that they, you know, Paris Hilton could hold some stock in this thing and earn her dividends and pay a maximum 15% income tax on it. I mean, nobody ever even imagined this. So anyway, my private prison rant, I wanted to share it with you. It's a thought for the day. You know, far more pressing, I think, unless you're, you know, one of those people who gets nailed and locked up because the private prison industry is pushing for, you know, keeping pot illegal or whatever it may be. Or three strikes and you're outlaws, things like that. Far more pressing issue right now is the Mitt Romney presidential campaign melting down in front of us as he comes out and lies about the order in which events happened yesterday in Egypt and Libya, and then blames them all on the president. It's mind-boggling. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee, listening on the TuneIn app. Hey, Carl, what's up?
What's up, man? Thank you for taking my call. Listen, Governor Romney, when the statements he made were, they were irresponsible, they were out of the timeline, and he just jumped the gun, and it reeks of a desperate campaign. And he has become, him and his running mate has become, and I have to give credit to the media, and not just because the media is trying to do their jobs by calling balls and strikes. Right. I think the media, the only reason why they're doing their jobs calling balls and strikes like they didn't do in 2004 is because they know, like my wife, when she come in from work, she gives her news, not from television, but from the internet sources.
Sure.
So they know they're competing with other sources of information now, like they was in the 2004. So they have to call balls and strikes. They have to say liar instead of disingenuous and that type of crap right
yeah.
there. But something is more. So they've become more comfortable with telling lies, and I'm glad to see the media calling them out. But there's something more insidious going on here. You mentioned something, and I don't think you stayed on it long enough, and far be it for me to tell you how to do your show, but I am going to make this suggestion when I get off the phone. That you,
real quick, Carl, what was it?
Think about, okay, real quick, the smiling that Mitt Romney do. You know, sometimes your mind don't catch things, and I froze the television. This is early when he was making a statement live,
right?
And I rewinded
so
it.
So he's smiling as he's criticizing the president, and these people are dying. I got it. Carl, thank you for that.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And it does need to be emphasized. In fact, over at Democratic Underground right now, there's a great collection of pictures of Mitt Romney grinning and smiling as he's criticizing the president, and then the president and Secretary Clinton with grave looks.
And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antonio.
Oh, man. I'll tell you about watching Columbo, right? The first year of Columbo. That one of the episodes that Louise and I watched a couple of days ago was starring Johnny Cash as the bad guy that Columbo nailed, right, as the killer. It was incredible. Anyhow, Norm, this is what you do when you know, I'm recovering from surgery, she's recovering from chemo, we're sitting around, what are you going to do? Let's watch Columbo. Norm in Detroit. Hey, Norm, thanks for listening to WDTW. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Great show today.
Thank you.
Your last two callers said a lot of stuff about what I was going to say, so I'll get to this. Anyone who's in the 99%, if you got to get up every day to go to work, I don't care if you got a business or whatever, if you have to go to work every day, right, and take care of your family, and you're supporting a party who is bound and determined to destroy that and with their policies and with their laws and with everything else, then it seems to me at this juncture towards the election that you have to be a bigot or a fool to support these people. Now, when I say a bigot, I mean someone who knows how to reason, who knows what's really going on, but decides to take the lie anyway.
Yeah.
A fool is someone who doesn't know how to think. Someone else does their thinking for them, and they don't know how to think, so they go by gut. That's what I think, gut reaction. Well, I got to go by how I feel.
Well, and to some extent, they're also going by what they see on these, you know, $1 billion worth of television commercials.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. There's no way you can tell me, with all the resources and access to information that we have, that you cannot find out what's the truth on most of these issues out here. Some of them are so stark and it's so obvious, and then you still want to support these Republicans, these conservatives, who want to destroy unions, who want to destroy our schools, who want to take our jobs and send them overseas, and you still want to support them? You're a fool.
Yep.
You must be.
Please don't use the word "you," because I'm.
One must be.
They are. Yes. You're absolutely right, Norm. I'm right there with you. Thank you very much. You said it very, very well, and I appreciate the call. And thank you for listening to WDTW. Paul in Woodinville, Washington, listening on Talk 1090 in Seattle. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Not that facts would change the mind of the caller at the end of the last hour, but
the guy who kept saying Obama hates America, and I kept saying, please give me one example.
Yeah. Everything.
Yeah, his agenda. His agenda.
Everything is agenda.
Right. Where's his agenda written down?
He also referred to Islam as a cult. Well, I would point out that Islam, there's about 1.6 billion Muslims in the world, which compares about equally to Christians. Catholics are 1.1 billion and about 500 million Protestants. There are about 800 million Hindus and 300 million Buddhists. But you know how many Mormons there are? Worldwide, about 13 million, and half of those live in the United States.
Right.
So talk about what a cult is. All right, I wanted to point this out, Tom. Prior to 1948, historically, there's not a single act of aggression from the Islamic world towards the West. If anybody can come up with a single example prior to the recreation of Israel, and by the way, modern terrorism, the first act of modern terrorism was committed by the Jewish resistance group Haganah in July 1946.
Blowing up the King David Hotel.
Blowing up the King David Hotel. And it was the most deadly up until Pan Am 103. It killed 262 Palestinians and British people as well.
Sure. So, and it brought about a nation. And you could argue that, you know, that acts of terrorism or acts of violence have brought about independence in Iraq. I don't want to get into that. I don't think that there's any. But
sure,
if you're looking for examples prior to 1948, I would give you the 18th and 19th century occupation of much of Europe by the Ottoman Empire, by the Muslim world. I mean, they had half of Europe at one point.
Well,
and they had it by force of violence.
A lot of people don't know that there were actually three Islamic empires. There was the Ottoman, which is actually the Middle East, the Safavid Empire, which is Iran, and the Mughal Empire, which was India and Pakistan. But you know what happened in the Ottoman Empire in World War II? It was the British and the French who wanted to go through the from the east to attack Germany from the east, and the Ottomans wouldn't let them. But the Saudis sold out because they said, well, if you let us go through, we'll split up the Middle East and give you part of it.
Right.
And, well, of course, when they finally attacked Germany from the east and went through the Ottoman Empire, they split up the Middle East.
Yeah, okay.
And didn't give anybody except them.
Paul, we're discussing minutia here. What's the big picture point here? What's the larger issue that you're trying to make?
I'm saying that the issue is that the perception in this country is that Islam is a violent religion, and I'm saying that it had basically no contact with the West up until about the 18th century.
Well, I think they had some pretty radical contact with the West in the 10th century, in the 11th century, with the Crusades.
Well, that was the West coming to the Islamic world for the Crusades.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, and then the Islamic world had a catastrophe when Genghis Khan came from Mongolia and slaughtered everybody. But the Islamic world was not aggressive towards the West. And up in the early late 19th and early 20th centuries, we were trying to establish secular governments. But as you pointed out, Mossadegh was displaced by our CIA because he canceled. BP owned the mineral rights to Iran.
Really?
And he canceled those contracts.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And that's why. And then the CIA overthrew Mossadegh and installed the Shah. And by the way, Dwight Eisenhower was outraged about that.
Oh, really? That his own CIA had done that?
Yeah. He said, "Do you know what you're doing?"
Oh,
yeah.
That's interesting. I did not know that. I've got to read more history of that time and that era. Paul, thank you for sharing that with me. And thanks for. I'm telling you, we've got the smartest. Absolutely the smartest listeners of any show on radio or television.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Not to mention the great minds in our chat room every day. You can visit it. It's free over at TomHartman.com. Just drop in, say hi. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very anatropicously ugly. The good. John Archer. Archer is a Republican candidate for the U.S. House from Iowa. When asked by a reporter if he differs from the Republican Party on any issues, Archer replied, quote, "I believe the party platform calls for the death penalty, and I'm personally opposed to the death penalty," end quote. He went on to say that while working as a clerk at the Illinois Supreme Court, he had seen firsthand how we as Americans, quote, have put innocent people to death and how life is too precious to do that, end of quote. Finally, a conservative saying that we need to abolish the death penalty. Fact of the matter is, Archer is absolutely right. This country has put dozens of people to death who were innocent of the crimes they were convicted for. And we've even put people to death who are mentally challenged, which is against the Constitution. It's time to say no to the death penalty for good. The bad. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. During an interview with Sean Hannity, Paul compared the U.S. government's decision to reclaim some stolen property to Nazi Germany's confiscation of Jewish property. In the 1930s, a set of 10 gold double-eagle coins were illegally removed from the U.S. Mint, stolen. When the government recently found the coins, it sued the woman who had them, saying they were U.S. property. A judge recently found in the government's favor. Regardless, comparing the U.S. government to Nazi Germany was a bit much from Senator Paul. But then again, we have come to expect these kinds of outrageous and insensitive statements from the far hard right. And the very, very ugly Mitt Romney, the man who would be president of the United States, apparently doesn't care about foreign policy. In an interview with BuzzFeed published yesterday morning, Romney advisor Robert O'Brien said, speaking of the Obama campaign, that, quote, "It doesn't surprise me that they're raising foreign policy because it's another distraction from the administration's terrible economic record," end quote. What Mr. O'Brien and his boss don't realize is that as president of the United States, you have to deal with other nations and other international leaders. You have to calm tensions around the globe and work with other nations to achieve common goals. If Mitt Romney's elected president, we could have a president who's not just inept in foreign policy, but a president who doesn't even care about it. And that is very, very ugly. That is mind-bogglingly ugly. Kurt in Houston, Texas. Hey, Kurt, you've got experience with state-run prisons and private prisons?
Yes, unfortunately, I do have a little experience with both. And I'll tell you that the state prison, I was in California and Arizona, mm-hmm. and the state prisons there were ran much better than the privatized ones, which were basically storage facilities for human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Just people stacked in a pod in a concrete tin building for 24 hours, 7 days a week, you know, let out into a square yard to walk around. Many riots broke out. Many drugs were brought in. It was just not a good place to be.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that you were there, and thank you for sharing your experience with us.
I have more to say than just on the prison system, Tom, and I thank you for your show and informing the public. I'm 51 years old, born in 1960, and I remember when this country was a different place.
Yeah.
It seemed to be starting to really take some big changes when Reagan took office,
yep.
and it's just been all going downhill. and the Democrats today are getting blamed for policies that were changed under the Republican administrations. These bills that they change, these laws that they change, while nobody's looking, have long-lasting effects.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to, know the truth, and they don't want to take the time to research it. They don't have the time in our busy daily lives to survive.
Yeah.
And it's up to shows like this to really get in and educate some of these people, because they're just being brainwashed by all the hype that the money, that the
Republicans. Well, it's a very intentional big lie strategy that's being used by the Republicans this year. And it's astounding.
Oh, yeah.
It's just astounding. I mean, and they've come right out. I mean, their head guy, their head pollster guy said, we're not going to run a campaign that's dictated by fact checkers. In other words,
we got to get the facts out there. They got to dig up the facts. We need the 9/11 thing researched. I mean, America creates its own terror. And that's not just here, but around the world. And people need to, just not take things at face value, look into them, and draw an educated opinion. Right. There's just too much of this hype and bolstering and
name-calling
going
Kurt,
on.
Well
thank
said.
You very much for
thank,
your time. And
thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Bethany in Chicago. Hey, Bethany, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Thank you so much for taking my call. I just want to say that I've called before about NATO policy since March 2011, and mm-hmm. it's really making us more unsafe. And there are pictures that look a lot like Gaddafi. And I want to say more that that as liberals, I'm just shocked that no one said anything about black-skinned African genocide in Libya and the rebels that we have been supporting and funding.
Okay. I don't know that much about it. Are you talking about the Arabs versus the Africans in the southern part of Libya?
I'm talking about people that we're funding to kill and torture Gaddafi. I mean, we're seeing the same pictures of this ambassador, and it's not being said anywhere. I'm afraid for this is the best foreign policy it seems like we're going to get.
Right. I'll have to learn more about that. I certainly know what's going on
too.
In Sudan. I've been
there,
but I have not been
rebels.
To Libya.
These rebels, this is what we're funding, these extremist groups.
Yeah.
And it's all to stop the gold dinar, is what Gaddafi said, and it looks like that's what it was for.
Well, we got rid of Gaddafi, so now it's...
These are the same torture pictures.
Yeah.
And this is what... I can't believe that liberals would support something like this.
Okay.
It's a shame that progressives don't have Cindy Sheehan on their program anymore.
Bethany, for the record, when the president decided to militarily intervene in Libya, I was opposed to that. I felt that was a mistake.
This is blowback, and this has been our foreign policy since 1979. I feel like we're repeating ourselves.
Yeah, well, it's been our foreign policy since the 50s.
And these are NATO war crimes, and I'm afraid that our president is now a war criminal.
Yeah.
And this isn't being, now that this whole right fringe, I mean, they scare me, especially when these pictures are, leaked.
Yeah. Bethany, thank you for the call. These are big issues, and they don't have simple answers. Maury in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Maury, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yeah, I was calling about the Chicago pension.
Go for it.
The strike that's going on right now with the pensions and stuff.
Yeah, the teachers.
Problems they're having with paying them right now. The city is the only one that pays pensions. The other suburbs and the rest of the state have their own districts that make up the pensions, but the state pays for the pensions, which is a big problem.
But the teachers pay 8% of their salary for their pensions, don't they?
In Chicago.
Chicago. Right. But they don't in the suburbs and the rest of the state.
The pensions are through the different districts. I live outside the city of Chicago, and the Elgin superintendent just went off with a medical leave, but her husband moved to Missouri for his job, and they paid her with a medical thing, and no one has yet to find out what that was.
Yeah.
And then gave her an extra 6 months just for a retirement plan.
Yeah.
So part of the problem here is, all the suburban
schools. What's your point, Maury?
Well, out here, all the suburban schools, are air conditioned and stuff, and part of the stuff in Chicago isn't. And
yes,
there's definitely a bigger difference between the affluent districts and
in the suburban schools. They're spending $20,000 to $25,000 a year per student in most of the Chicago suburbs. In the Chicago city itself, they pay around $8,000 a year per student. So, of course, you're going to have schools that don't have air conditioning in the summer, that don't have even decent heating in the winter. Of course, you're going to have schools with rats in them. You're going to have teachers who are you know, feel like they're under siege. You're going to have fewer school nurses. They need to be raising the funding for the Chicago public schools. And instead, you know, Rahm Emanuel and Mayor Daley before him have been cutting that funding and instead giving that money to for-profit, buddies, I would submit to you, for-profit companies that want to run these so-called charter schools.
And they can't be union teachers, neither.
Right, so, right. They're getting rid of the unions. Yeah, it's all about killing off the unions. Maury, thanks a lot for the call. Lee in Denham Springs, Louisiana. Lee, we have a minute to the break. What's up?
Okay, I'm talking about the retired military people who are on TRICARE for life.
Right.
To get TRICARE for life when they pass a class action lawsuit, we have to have Medicare Part B. Well, if they privatize Medicare or they start issuing vouchers, all the military people would lose their TRICARE for life.
Wow. I didn't realize that. Medicare is part of TRICARE?
A lot of retirees are not aware of that.
Wow. Well, you know, I need to run down those details on that, and we need to be talking about that. You know, so you're saying that Paul Ryan's plan, which all the Republicans in the House of Representatives voted in favor of and passed the House of Representatives, it's being blocked in the Senate by Harry Reid. Paul Ryan's plan to voucherize Medicare would destroy TRICARE for military retirees.
That's right. TRICARE for life. These are the retirees who have reached age 65.
Yeah. But, I mean, you'd get a voucher still, wouldn't you?
Well, what would you do with that?
Right. Well, if you have a pre-existing condition or heart disease or diabetes or something, probably you can't do anything with it. But if you're in perfect health, you might find an insurance company that would take it. Lee, thanks a lot for the call. Excellent point. Thank you very much. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And more of your calls and my thoughts and the news right after this.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
You tell him, Leonard. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Will in Chicago. Hey, Will, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I thought I'd give you a call as a friend of mine, Ray, and a few others have been looking into this whole film thing. Mm-hmm. The Atlantic is reporting that Steve Klein, a consultant for the film, says that this Sam Basile guy is definitely not an Israeli, probably not Jewish, and AP reported earlier that Israeli officials speaking out of anonymity said they didn't know who he was. I mean, the point of the film, to me, obviously, is to make people upset, much like that cartoon in the Danish newspaper.
Sure.
And while I do defend free speech rights, and it is, and I thought the embassy's statement last night was made to try to calm the situation, I do believe in trying to treat others with respect, the same respect that I would ask for myself. In the end, I think we have to ask ourselves what we value. And this is one of the reasons I found Governor Romney's comments so disturbing, namely that not only did he have the order of the facts wrong,
right,
he thought that trying to calm a heated situation with diplomacy, with kind words, was the wrong approach. And this makes me question not only his fitness to be president, but the fitness to run for a major office, period.
Yeah, even Paul Ryan didn't go into that territory. He had a meeting today where he asked for a moment of silence to remember the four diplomats who were slain, and then, you know, simply said, this is a terrible thing, and we need to, you know, it wasn't even a we need to. I mean, Paul Ryan dealt with it respectfully, unlike Mitt Romney, which is bizarre. I mean, when Paul Ryan is outshining you as a diplomat, you know you're in deep trouble, because Paul Ryan?
Deep trouble, profound trouble. I mean, consider this. We had a president who, when he spoke in Cairo, spoke on behalf of democracy. Are there going to be troubles on the way to establishing democracy in a country that hasn't known it? Yes. Consider U.S. history. Consider English history before that.
Yeah, yes. we had a civil war, for goodness sakes, and so did the U.K. back in the 1600s. I mean, it's exactly,
and yet there's progress. I think one thing we have to remember is that this was a small group. I read a report on Democracy Now! That there were protests today remembering the ambassadors, Christopher Stevens and those slain, because he was actually respected by a lot of people in Libya. Let us move beyond stereotyping and scapegoating each other and try to have a foreign policy that works for everyone rather than short-term games such as what happened with Mossadegh in Iran. If we actually help people to build their civil societies, we will gain more influence and long-term access to resources. We have to be, in the words of Benjamin Franklin, neither penny wise nor pound foolish, and give to others that which we demand for ourselves, respect and dignity.
Yeah, well said. Well said, Will. Thank you very much for sharing that. Christy in Good Thunder, Minnesota. Hey, Christy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm just calling because I am post-traumatic brain injury by 23 years. Mm-hmm. And those kids that we've got over in the Mideast, that's the signature wound. And
it is, yes.
And it's so sad. Those kids are going to be coming home and struggling for the rest of their freaking lives.
Yep, and they have one of the highest suicide rates we've ever seen right now.
Absolutely.
You know, every day, I think it's every day 11 soldiers kill themselves. It's just some startling number. I mean, it's so tragic. Christy, thank you for I'm assuming that therefore that you wanted to, the point that you wanted to make is that it's time to bring our troops out of the Middle East.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm totally with you on that.
Mothers need to get their kids home.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Christy, for the call. And thank you for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Networks. Jay, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to let you know I was listening earlier, and you were talking about how the CIA was responsible for the overthrow of Mossadegh in Iran.
Yeah.
And what I always heard, I thought I heard this from your show, but I thought that France needed their oil, and they needed a kind of a strong-arm regime put in. So we went in and overthrew Mossadegh and put in a strong arm leader, which we usually do, which I think that's how that's why you have a picture of Rumsfeld shaking hands with the leader of Iraq that we overthrew.
Yeah, Saddam Hussein.
Yes. Well, we
installed Saddam Hussein as well, by the way. He had a predecessor who had been democratically elected. He overthrew him in a military coup that we supported.
Yeah.
The same as we overthrew Mossadegh and replaced him with the Shah in Iran. And then those two countries went to war with each other for 10 years. And during that 10 years, we were supplying the Iranians with intelligence about what the Iraqis were doing. And we were supplying Iraqis with military armaments that they could use and chemical warfare that they could use against the Iranians. And a million people on both sides died. And we were playing both sides against each other. And we wonder why they don't like us.
That's what we do, and you got to keep an eye on what's going on in Nigeria right now with Shell Oil, because it's played all over again, especially in Africa right now. We put in strong-arm leaders.
But back to Iran and Iraq. I mean, did you know that right now we're trying to tighten the screws on Iran with this embargo, and that Iraq is giving Iran the right to use their airspace and their land to transport goods that we're trying to get them to embargo? I mean, Iraq that we supposedly created has said, we're with Iran on these things. You know, they're Shia governments. It's incredible. And they got rid of their Sunni vice president. Anyhow, coming up tomorrow on our program, we'll have the latest in the Chicago teacher strike, plus geeky science rocks, the best of the rest of the news. and your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for We the People. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up, when you participate. Get out there, get active, occupy something, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.